So I have a question for you. What is the shape of the internet? Oh, you say you've never considered that question? Well, until recently, neither had I. It isn't even clear if it's that good of a question. The internet's not a physical object, it's a digital network. How could it have a shape? Of course, there is the hardware that actually creates the network of connections that the internet relies on, but their real-world geography never seemed especially important. Whenever I pictured the internet, I always thought of it like the map of a subway system. You know, the ones where you have the stations and lines running between them, but the map doesn't have any relationship to the geography of the city itself. And while the internet can be mapped just like that, just like a subway, it turns out that there's also another way. Another way that is closely related to the geometry of a library.
Imagine that you're going to the library and you want to find a book. There are many books in the library, and these books can be categorized. For example, you want to find something like maybe this book on, say, Lorentzian geometry. Okay. Imagine that you don't know what the book you're looking for, but you want to find some book on Lorentzian geometry, right? Then you, when you enter the library, that you understand that you don't want to go to, say, art or fiction or whatever. You want to go to the science part of the library. So roughly speaking, all books in the library can be categorized at this top level as, for example, arts, humanities, and science, right? So you go to this portion of the library where books on science are kept. Okay, so this is a large group of books. Now, within this science portion, there is physics, there is mathematics, there is engineering, and so on and so forth. So within this large category of books on science, on scientific books, there is subcategories. Then you enter this portion of the library where the book on mathematics are kept, because that's what you're looking for. So, okay, in mathematics, there are different categories as well. For example, geometry, topology, analysis, and so on and so forth. Then you understand that you need to look in the geometric portion of that subcategory. And then you understand that you're not looking for the Riemannian geometry, but you're looking for the Lorentzian geometry, and this way you're even narrowing down all the books that are kept in the library to this small subcategory on Lorentzian geometry, and within that category you may find something that you're looking for.
That was Dmitry Krukov.
D-M-I-T-R-I, Dmitry, K-R-I-O-U-K-O-V, Krukov.
Senior research scientist at the Cooperative Association for Internet Data Analysis at the University of California, San Diego, and one of the researchers studying the underlying shape of the internet. They began this research by trying to unscramble the geometry of complex networks in general, be they biological, technological, or even social.
But if you look now at this geometry of categories of different books, then you understand that the picture that emerges is that there is a library, which is a collection of all books. Then it can be split into the subcategories of art, science, humanities. Then within each category, there is a further splitting, further splitting, further splitting. So the logical structure of relationships between different categories can be visualized as a tree. Okay. And hyperbolic geometry is basically a soft version, continuous version of the geometry of trees. And if we now recognize that complex networks are basically networks of different elements, distinguishable elements, and then these elements, these entities that interact, and the interaction between these entities are the links in the network. But we're not looking at these links, we're looking at the latent structure of categorization between different elements. Then we understand that all these elements can be split into categories, and this each individual category can be further split into subcategories and so on and so forth, then we are forced to recognize that something like hyperbolic geometry or the geometry of trees underlying the structure that we observe in many real networks.
Real-world complex networks have two very important properties. There's a low occurrence of non-complete triads, and there's an abundance of hubs. If you're not a network theorist, this probably doesn't mean that much to you. So instead, let's try framing it in the language of social networks. The first property means that if you're friends with two people, it is highly likely that they're going to be friends with each other as well. And the second property just means that there's a bunch of very popular people. The amazing thing that Dr. Krukoff and his fellow researchers found is that these two properties appear naturally if you presume that a network has an underlying hyperbolic framework. Determining this underlying geometrical framework of complex networks is all well and good. Actually, it's a rather amazing feat, but it still doesn't give us the shape of a real-world network, such as the internet. That takes more work.
So how do you actually go from taking one of these real-world networks and kind of modeling them in the hyperbolic geometry?
Now, if you are given a real network, say an intranet, that is given to you by the structure of the internet, of course, you don't know anything about its latent geometry. So the task, the very complicated task, is to infer the coordinates of each node in the real network. The coordinates of this node in this latent hyperbolic space. How you do that? Well, there are a variety of methods, again, coming from statistical physics or machine learning in computer science, that operate as follows. Imagine that you believe that the internet is indeed has this latent geometry, and if it has this latent geometry, then there is a certain probability that this particular network, which is the internet, can be generated by our model. This probability then depends on the coordinates of each node in the latent space. So what we can use is the, for example, the method which is called Markov chain Monte Carlo, that is trying to find the coordinates of each node in this latent space such that the probability of this particular network, the internet, is maximized if the coordinate of each node is this. So essentially, we are trying to find the coordinates of each node in the latent space, maximizing the probability that this particular network is being generated by our model. So this task is called the statistical inference task. It's well defined both in machine learning and in statistical mechanics. Unfortunately, of course, to execute this algorithm is a very challenging task, but we managed to succeed and to find the coordinates of each node in the internet. And we showed that indeed the congruency between the model and the inferred coordinates are very good.
There, the internet does have a shape, and they found it. Well, they created a very accurate model of it, at least. This is cool, but seems to be very much art for art's sake. While there's nothing wrong with doing art or math for its own sake, that just doesn't happen to be the case here. The researchers had a motivation, but in order to understand what it was, we need to better understand how the internet is actually structured.
Many people know that the internet is a set of wires connecting routers. That's roughly true. And indeed, at a certain level of abstraction, the internet can be considered as a collection of routers and wires that connect these routers. That's not what we are talking about. So what we are talking about here is a different level of abstraction, which is called the structure of the internet at the autonomous systems level. What is autonomous system? Autonomous system is roughly an organization, a company, or maybe even individual, that owns a set of routers, a set of what we called a portion of the internet infrastructure. Now, what are the connections between these autonomous systems? And we can represent, of course, the autonomous system now as a node at this much higher level of abstraction. The connections between autonomous systems are essentially business relationships, economic relationships between these organizations. So what we are talking about here, that we are considering the large-scale structure of the internet, because it abstracts a lot of lower level details that we actually cannot measure at the router level. So that's the structure of the internet that we are talking about here.
This is about as basic of an explanation as is possible of the structure of the internet. But no matter how simple one gets, there's always going to be one truism about the internet. Data has to move. The rules that govern how this data moves currently are called the Border Gateway Protocol, or BGP. To understand how BGP works, imagine a road atlas, but with all the geography subtracted. Essentially, we're talking about an atlas without maps. Instead, this atlas is just going to be a list of cities and all the roads that connect them. It's still a very good atlas, though, because if you give it the name of any two cities, it's going to tell you the shortest path that you can take between them. At a very rough level, BGP functions like this atlas, only for connections between the autonomous systems that comprise the internet. And as long as nothing changes, it is very effective. The problem is, of course, that the internet changes all the time. We could be talking about new connections being forged or a new autonomous system joining the internet, but from time to time these changes are much more catastrophic, such as the severing of a submarine cable. An event like that could easily cause a disruption to a connection that BGP is using to move data. And well,
Is it a problem? Yes, it is. Because if the graph changes, then not only the path between these two individual autonomous systems between which the connection has been lost is affected, but also, since this link was used for many other paths between autonomous systems that may be far away from this cut link, then not only those paths that are local to this lost link must be recomputed, but also all other paths that were using this link. So again, very roughly speaking, what's going on? And upon a change of the structure of the network, which is constantly occurring in the internet due to these lost links, or due to just the growth of the whole internet, Many paths, global paths in the internet must be recomputed. How? Of course, that what BGP is responsible for. It needs to rediscover the structure of the new graph and then recompute new shortest paths between each pair of nodes in this graph. And that's what's going on. More importantly, how exactly BGP does rediscover this new graph structure? Of course, the two autonomous systems that are adjacent to, for example, cut link in our example, start sending messages to all their neighbors saying that this link is no longer there, please update your information. Then their neighbors send information to their neighbors, and so on and so forth. And therefore, in the worst case, there is this exponential growth of the number of messages that go all over the network, all over the global internet, in order for this algorithm, for the BGP, to reconverge upon this topological change in the network. And this exponential growth of the number of messages in the network has been considered as one of the most serious limitations in scalability of today's routing protocols.
And that is the motivation. While BGP is very good at routing information as long as the network is mostly static, it does start to have problems as the internet morphs and evolves. Dr. Krukoff and his colleagues thought that maybe this was the case because the Atlas did not contain any geography. There was no map of the internet. And perhaps their work in hyperbolic cartography might just hold the answer to this problem.
So what we're essentially saying is that there is this picture. In road atlas, it's just a geography, but in the internet case, it's this hyperbolic geometry. And that using this picture, you can route very efficiently. In particular, the routing algorithm essentially becomes that when you arrive in the intersection, when you arrive at the node, and the node now is an autonomous system, then this geometric routing says that at each intersection, please just follow the link to the neighbor, which is closest to the destination in this underlying geometry that we discover.
Just go to the next node that's closest to the destination? What could be easier than that? It must be noted that in the end, ease and simplicity are not the most important aspects of data routing, though. Path length and success are.
So what we found is that in the map constructed for the internet, success ratio is very, very close to 100%. It's not 100%, which is a small problem, but nevertheless, in the BGP, the success ratio is 100%, but it requires this huge recomputation. In our case, it's 97%, so 3% of source destination pairs still are getting lost. But nevertheless, 97% of source destination pairs do reach each other using this simple algorithm. What's interesting is that the stretch is just virtually one. So if you can go from one node to another for these 97% of node pairs, the paths that this prescription produces, this greedy routing, what we call, produces, is just shortest.
A 97% success rate and shortest paths. Not too shabby. In fact, if you modify the algorithm slightly, add just a little bit more complexity, then a 100% successful algorithm is possible. Of course, BGP already has these properties. But let's remember the motivation for creating this map of the internet in the first place.
The most important result is that even if you start disturb the network, break it down, then both the success ratio and stretch essentially stay stable. For example, one experiment that we did is that we removed 30% of links and nodes in the network. So essentially, a third of the network is gone.
So that we're talking essentially like massive natural disaster.
Right. It's massive natural disaster. It never occurred in the internet because you removed essentially the third of the internet, right? It never happened before. Success ratio in this case, the percentage of paths that cannot communicate, decreased by less than 10%. For comparison with BGP, there was an accident a long time ago, I think approximately more than 10 years ago now already, yes. When just one, but big, autonomous systems went down, more than 50% of source destination pairs could not communicate in this case. So the success ratio, roughly speaking, dropped by more than 50%. In our case, when you remove not one, but the third of all autonomous systems in the internet, the number of pairs that could not communicate decreases by less than 10%. But of course, this comparison is a little bit stretched because you cannot directly compare. But this just to get some feeling about the rough number.
Now that is a result. So clearly, every single company that creates hardware that happens to route data around the internet is going to adopt this algorithm tomorrow, right?
The issue is if it's worth of investment to implement in the internet today this routing solution. So I believe it is so, but this is not our call. For this algorithm to be implemented, it will require some substantial changes to the existing routing infrastructure. And these changes must be first implemented by vendors, and then, of course, it must be supported by the autonomous system, by the operators that operate the internet infrastructure. So that's the question to them. So if they will be willing to implement it. And the question boils down to a very simple one. Will they benefit economically in terms of revenue that they generate from this algorithm? Because indeed, scalability and problems associated with it do involve some costs for them. But are these costs high enough to make this change profitable in a coordinated manner? That is the question that we don't know the answer for.
Whether or not this routing method ends up being adopted, the technique of taking what is considered shapeless and finding its geometry does seem to have a certain power. I personally am looking forward to seeing what is mapped next. May I suggest my social network? I could use some insights there.